Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When family is all that matters, make sure they're protected. Visit Zurich.ie to learn more about life and serious illness cover.
The Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, has called for an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. He was speaking ahead of an emergency UN Security Council session this afternoon about the escalating violence. Since Monday, at least 48 people have been killed in Gaza, including 14 children. Three Palestinians in the West Bank and five Israelis have also been killed. On the News at One earlier today, the Israeli ambassador to Ireland was asked about the Geneva Convention, which specifically says that parties to a conflict must at all times distinguish between civilian population and combatants. He was asked by Brian Dobson where the evidence is that Israel has made that distinction.
The vast majority of people killed in Gaza are Hamas terrorists and Hamas members. Unfortunately, sometimes, especially in dense populated areas like Gaza, some others are going in harm's way. Israel is doing it at its utmost to ensure that only terrorists are being targeted. There's another important issue that, just important here that has to do with civilians. Around 30% of the rockets fired by Hamas and the Islamic Jihad fall inside Gaza itself. And we know for sure that quite a few casualties there, including children,
right,
were killed by the fire of Hamas and Gaza and the Islamic Jihad itself.
But 49 dead overnight, it's reported from Gaza. And we just heard from Fadi there, 12 of those were children, 4 of those were women. So how can you say that, how can you know that most of those who are casualties are Hamas?
We know exactly who we target. The Israeli...
Do you know who you kill, Ambassador?
Usually, yes. Not always. Again, it's very complicated. And I think this is where we see the double war crime of Hamas and the outcomes of the double war crime of Hamas, which first fires at indiscriminately at Israeli population, civil population centers, and at the same time uses its own population as shields, as human shields.
We know who we target, and usually we know who we kill. That is the Israeli ambassador to Ireland on the News at One with Brian Dobson. I'm joined now by Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney. Minister, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Cormac.
What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, you know, I've been very vocal over the last few days. I think the fact that we are in another cycle of violence between Israelis and Palestinians is tragic for both sides. But there's two things I think I need to say. First of all, we need to understand the context around this cycle of violence and what has driven the divisions that has resulted in so many deaths in the last 36 hours. And then secondly, the responsibilities that Israel has in particular in terms of protecting civilians and children. Nobody defends the firing of rockets from Gaza into Israel. No right-minded person anyway. Hamas is a terrorist group. They've sent almost 1,000 rockets indiscriminately towards Israel. Most of those have been stopped by a shield system. But it is the responsibility of the international community also, in my view, to call out the responsibilities that the Israeli government and defense forces have in the context of the number of civilians and children that have been killed in the targeted attacks on Gaza. I mean, I've been in Gaza on a number of occasions. It's a highly densely populated area. And what we're seeing here is severe targeted bombing in Gaza. Unfortunately, nearly a third of the people that have been killed there have been children. 14 of the 48 so far. And, you know, those numbers are changing by the hour. And Israel has an international obligation under international humanitarian law to ensure that they protect civilians and children in conflict situations. And of course, I understand that Israel has the right to defend itself and to respond to rocket attacks. But they also have an obligation to ensure that in responding, they are not targeting innocent children.
And let's focus on that.
Has been happening, and it's been happening too much.
Yeah, let's focus on that for a second, because you used the word a number of times, and I know you've caveated this in the recent past, targeted attacks. But would you go so far as to say now that Israel is being reckless or indiscriminate with those attacks, given the amount of civilians and children who have died?
Well, Israel will say, as the ambassador said earlier, that they always try to target Hamas targets. They try to target targets where rockets are coming from, and I can understand that. But you do need to understand Gaza to understand why that is virtually impossible. Because people live on top of each other in high-rise buildings in very densely populated areas. And we have seen whole buildings essentially being targeted and collapsing, albeit with warnings before missiles were sent into those buildings.
Is that indiscriminate murder?
No, I don't think it's indiscriminate murder. But I think we... in Ireland, but also in the Security Council, in the Foreign Affairs Council in the European Union, have to ask the hard questions as to whether international law is being respected here. Mm-hmm. We know that Hamas aren't respecting international law, but that does not justify the Israeli Defense Forces in targeting Hamas targets in Gaza knowingly. Accepting the killing of innocent civilians and children, and that is what we've been calling out over the last 24 hours.
But when you say you have to ask the hard questions, given what we've seen over the last 48 hours or so, why is it not indiscriminate murder? When the Taoiseach said in the Dáil yesterday, for example, you cannot bomb Gaza without killing children, teenagers and innocent civilians. You yourself have described what you saw when you were in Gaza, the density of the population, the type of buildings, and you have also seen the strikes from Israel. How is it not indiscriminate murder?
Because Israel will rightly claim that they have a right to defend themselves, and that has to be recognised. They have to protect their own civilians, six of whom have been killed by rocket attacks. But they also have an obligation, even a state that's defending itself has an obligation to ensure that they do everything possible to ensure that civilian populations and children are not killed in the act of defending your own citizens. And we are raising the question as to whether Israel has done enough to ensure that they are avoiding what some, I'm sure, would describe as collateral damage. But I don't accept that in the context of the killing of 14 children over 24 hours.
What did you say to the Israeli ambassador to Ireland yesterday in your meeting with him?
Look, I mean, I know the ambassador quite well because, I mean, I have taken for the last 3 years, a very close interest in the Middle East peace process. I've been there quite a number of times, to Gaza, to the West Bank, to Jerusalem, to Tel Aviv, and I've got to know quite a number of the key politicians on both sides, and of course three different ambassadors now from Israel. And, you know, I outlined in very direct terms our concern and our frustration, not just about the escalation of violence, although that was the main focus, but also the context in which this is happening. I mean, what we have seen since the start of the year is an escalation of the expansion of settlements in the West Bank, of demolitions of Palestinian homes, of forced evictions in parts of East Jerusalem, and in recent days also very heavy-handed policing in the context of holy sites in East Jerusalem, and effectively the storming of a mosque and the use of stun grenades inside in that mosque. Mm-hmm. And of course, that is going to create enormous tension between communities, which of course is what we're seeing now in Israel, in a number of towns where there's a high Israeli Arab population as well as a Jewish population. Huge tension, and you know, Hamas will look for opportunities to capitalize politically on tension, and that's what's happened. It was predictable, and that's what's happened. And now, of course, we're seeing the response to Hamas rockets, which has been intense and tragic in terms of the number of people who've lost their lives. Some of the people who've lost their lives are Hamas operatives, that is true, but unfortunately there are far too many innocent women and children.
If we're to believe both sides, Israel and Hamas, the death toll will rise. Now, the international reaction and response has been swift as well, and your voice is among them. But can I ask you about Ireland's ambassador to Israel? Because we're reading reports that he's been summoned to the Israeli Foreign Office over comments made by you about the escalating violence in the region. Can you firstly confirm if that's true?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's not the first time our ambassador has been called in by the foreign ministry. You know, I'm quite outspoken on the Middle East peace process, and sometimes
I'm critical. Do you see that as an attempt to muzzle you?
Well, it's not working, and I think, you know, we have a very good ambassador in Israel, to Israel, and he outlined in very clear terms why I've made the statements that I've made, why they're justified, why they're consistent with international law, mm-hmm. And why Ireland has an obligation as a Security Council member, as an EU member, to speak honestly and frankly about the concerns that we have.
Okay.
You know, I don't take sides on the Middle East peace process. It's not that I'm pro-Israeli or pro-Palestinian. The Irish position is based on international law and a respect for that, on UN Security Council resolutions and a respect for those,
okay.
And the obligations of an occupying power in occupied territory. And so Israel has obligations in that context, and it's important that they take them seriously, and the international community holds them to account for that.
Can I ask you about the North for a moment, if you don't mind, Minister? I might get your reaction, first of all, to the coroner's findings yesterday in relation to Ballymurphy, where 10 people were shot dead, and she said they were entirely innocent, and their deaths were without justification. The force was unjustified. I don't know if you've spoken with the Secretary of State, Brandon Lewis, since the findings were published.
Well, I've been in contact by text with the Secretary of State. I mean, we're in contact all the time. Look, I mean, I think yesterday was, well, first of all, hugely emotional, I would say. I mean, I've met the Ballymurphy families. They are incredibly courageous people, and they've been campaigning for 50 years to try to clear the names of their loved ones who were shot dead, and all 10. Have now been cleared as innocent men who were not armed, and there was no justification for their killing.
Can I bring you some breaking news, if you don't mind? I'm sorry to jump across, because my next question was about if the UK should apologise. But in the last few minutes, Prime Minister Boris Johnson has apologised unreservedly on behalf of the UK government for the events that took place in Ballymurphy, and the huge anguish caused to the families of those killed, Downing Street said, following a call with the First Minister and Deputy First Minister of Northern Ireland. Can I get your reaction to that?
Well, I think that's appropriate and very welcome. That's what I would say. I mean, I know how powerful David Cameron's apology was in the context of Bloody Sunday for the families involved there. And I also think that a Prime Minister apologising directly and unreservedly for what happened 50 years ago when people were killed, completely innocent people were killed and shouldn't have been. I hope that the families will get some comfort from that recognition from the very top of British government, from the Prime Minister. So it's very, very welcome.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad Prime Minister Johnson did that.
Do you think finally the good work of this apology then, if that's what it is, would be undone somewhat if the British government were to proceed with an amnesty, legislation to provide an amnesty for British soldiers and paramilitaries who operated in Northern Ireland before 98?
Well, look, the British government know the concerns that the Irish government have with that approach. We don't agree with it. You know, back in 2014, after a lot of very difficult and long negotiation, which involved consultation with victims groups and families, all political parties in Northern Ireland, and both governments. The Stormont House Agreement was signed and agreed. The UUP didn't agree to that, but all of the other parties did. And that, I think, has to be the basis for moving forward with the legacy of the past. Now, we agreed to structures that could investigate murders and atrocities and achieve prosecutions where possible, but also a process of establishing facts where possible, when prosecutions aren't possible, for families. And those structures have not been set up, and they should have been by now, and we'd like to proceed on that basis. We know that the British government has a different approach now that they want to pursue, and if there is to be a different approach to dealing with the legacy of the past, that has got to be on the basis of consultation with all of the people who were involved in putting the Stormont House Agreement structures together. You cannot address legacy on the basis of unilaterally deciding to move in a different direction.
Okay.
And I would really appeal to the British government to think again before pursuing a unilateral course of action, because it won't work.
Okay.
And people won't cooperate with that approach. So I hope, and I think it is possible, that we can have a process of discussion and negotiation. If the British government thinks that elements of the Stormont House Agreement can't work or won't work, well, then let's hear the arguments around that.
Well, they maybe feel the same way about the consensus. Maybe feel the same way, but the Northern Ireland Protocol, we didn't even get to that. That's a whole other can of worms. But for the moment, we'll leave it there. Simon Coveney, Minister for Foreign Affairs, thank you very much indeed.